Good day out there, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. This is the podcast Then and Now. This is episode 28. We took a little hiatus and we're back now. I'm your host, John Shomo, ready to go cover some facts for the week coming up, some current events, and a topic and three good questions that I think some of you will enjoy. So let's get started here. First of all, we will cover the facts and birthdays and anniversaries for the week starting September 9th, September 9th through September 15th. So here we go. On September 9th, 1850, California was admitted as the 31st state of the Union. Los Angeles Dodgers great left-hander Sandy Koufax pitched a perfect game versus the Chicago Cubs. On September 9th, 1965, it was a 1-0 game. The Dodgers only got one hit and scored one run, but that was enough. That was Koufax's fourth no-hitter in 4 years. He had one each in 62, 63, 64, and 65. Chinese Communist leader Mao Zedong passed away on September 9th, 1976. Birthdays include Talmadge's own and Firestone High grad Dr. Larry Roth will be 65. Hugh Grant, the actor, will be 64. Brett Hull, the Hall of Fame hockey player, will be 60. Adam Sandler, comic, actor, musician even, Adam Sandler will be 58. And former Cavaliers guard J.R. Smith, a college golfer, actually, after his basketball career ended, J.R. Smith will be 39. Moving to September 10th, Admiral Perry out on Lake Erie and the U.S. Navy won the Battle of Lake Erie on September 10th, 1813. The company Swanson's sold the first TV dinner on September 10th, 1953. Birthdays include the great Arnold Palmer, September 10th, 1929. I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know of any professional athlete who handled himself better in a crowd, treated fans better, just a prince of a guy. Can't say enough good things about the late, great Arnold Palmer. Roger Maris died way too young, hit 61 homers and broke the record in 1961, died in the mid-80s. Roger Maris, born September 10th, 1934. A couple of musicians, Jose Feliciano will be 79 on September 10th, and Joe Perry of Aerosmith will be 74. Moving to September 11th, and we will be doing, in the not-too-distant future here, a special edition of Then and Now, kind of by popular demand, on my recollections of September 11th, 2001. We'll be probably doing that here in the next few days. Aside from that, 60 years ago, September 11th, 1964, the Beatles were due to perform at the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida. They looked at the contract, and at the bottom of the contract, it said that you will be performing before a segregated audience. And they said, nope, we're not signing that. And there were some arguments, and they said, nope, we're not signing that. We're not doing it. And they were so big at the time that the people in charge in Jacksonville relented, and the Beatles played that night before the first ever segregated public audience in Jacksonville, Florida history, breaking barriers one way or another. They were good at that. Breaking records, Pete Rose was good at that. Pete Rose broke Ty Cobb's all-time hits record in Cincinnati on September 11th, 1985, with his 4,192nd hit. It was a single to left field off of Eric Schau of the San Diego Padres. Tupac Shakur was shot to death in Las Vegas on September 11th, 1996. Couple of birthdays, both from the football world, actually. Paul Bear Bryant, the legendary head coach at a couple other places, but legendary for his work at the University of Alabama. Bear Bryant, born September 11th, 1913. And Tom Landry, born 100 years ago, September 11th, 1924. The first coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He was their head coach from their inception in 1960 until Jerry Jones bought the team and fired him, believe it or not, in 1989. We should have known about Jerry Jones right there. Moving to September 12th, the British bombardment of Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor in Maryland began September 12th, 1814. I think there was a song devoted to that. We'll talk about that here in a bit. Senator John F. Kennedy of Massachusetts married Jacqueline Bouvier in Newport, Rhode Island, September 12th, 1953. The TV show The Monkees, which launched those four guys into a very successful music career. The Monkees premiered on NBC, September 12, 1966. Boston Red Sox legend Carl Yastrzemski got his 3,000th hit in Fenway Park on September 12, 1979. Johnny Cash, the legendary singer, died September 12, 2003. Birthdays that day include Jesse Owens, who set all kinds of records at both Ohio State and for the United States in the Berlin Olympics of 1936. Jesse Owens, born September 12, 1913. Jennifer Hudson will be 44, as will former NBA star Yao Ming from China. And Andrew Luck, quarterback at Stanford and for the Indianapolis Colts, retired very early. He's only 35. He'll be 35 on September 12th. Moving to September 13th, Yesterday was released as a single by the Beatles on September 13, 1965. Paul McCartney dreamed that, dreamt, if you will, that tune. Woke up, had the tune going through around his head, asked three other guys, hey, you guys ever heard this? And they said, eh, no, it doesn't sound familiar. He's asking all kinds of people in the music industry, hey, this is a tune I dreamt. I think I dreamt it. I want to make sure. Any of you ever heard this? No, they haven't. So then he set about putting words to the tune, and the first title of it was Scrambled Eggs, very famously. But Yesterday became kind of his breakout moment as an individual while he was still in the Beatles. Law and Order premiered on NBC September 13th, 1990. You all can hear the opening sound effect, I'm sure, as I say that. Dr. Walter Reed found a cure for malaria. September 13, 1851, he was born. General John J. Pershing, first five-star general. Oh, not the first. Grant was the first. The leader of the American Expeditionary Force in World War I, General Pershing, born September 13, 1860. 1996, U.S. Olympic double gold medal winner in the 100 and the 200, Michael Johnson, will be 57. Yankee center fielder and a superb guitar player, Bernie Williams, will be 56. Tyler Perry will be 55, and designer Stella McCartney will be 53. Okay, moving on, a couple more days left here. September 14th, the lawyer Francis Scott Key, sitting on a ship in Baltimore Harbor, trying to negotiate the release of an American prisoner with the British on the ship, wrote a poem while watching the bombardment of Fort McHenry. It was called The Star-Spangled Banner. It was put to the tune of an old English drinking song, pub song, and it became the national anthem of the United States. He wrote that poem September 14, 1814, in the early morning hours. On September 14, 1901, in those early morning hours, President William McKinley died at a doctor's home in Buffalo, New York. He had lived for 8 days after being shot at the Pan American Exposition there. Vice President Theodore Roosevelt was sworn in very early in the morning on that September 14th as the youngest president still in our nation's history. Teddy Roosevelt was only 42 when he took the oath of office that morning. Birthdays include the Russian psychologist Ivan Pavlov, Pavlov's dogs experiment, born September 14th, 1849. Hall of Fame basketball coach Larry Brown. I'd list all the places he coached, but it would take too long. Larry Brown will be 84. He won both the NBA title and the NCAA title as a coach. And the late Amy Winehouse, shame she died so young. She would only be 41 on September 14th. Finally, September 15th, 1862, the Battle of Harper's Ferry, then part of Virginia, soon to be part of West Virginia, is part of West Virginia today, during the Civil War. September 15th, 1963, one of the events during the civil rights movement that still burns me to this day, was a Sunday morning in Birmingham at the 16th Street Baptist Church. A Ku Klux Klan member or two set a bomb off inside the church, and it killed four young girls in their Sunday school classroom. It's just an unbelievably reprehensible act. The Beatles first played Cleveland at Public Hall. Public Hall is still there, near the lakefront, on September 15, 1964. Birthdays, long list here. Ohio-born down in Cincinnati, President William Howard Taft, the 27th President of the United States, born September 15, 1857. Hall of Fame pitcher, pitched for Cleveland for a while, Gaylord Perry, the late Gaylord Perry, born September 15, 1938. Football Hall of Famer Merlin Olsen, famous for his work at the Los Angeles Rams and on NBC television as Dick Enberg's partner on a lot of big games. Merlin Olsen, born September 15, 1940, played at Utah State, played his college ball there. Oliver Stone and Tommy Lee Jones. Oliver Stone, the director, Tommy Lee Jones, the actor. Tommy Lee Jones has acted in Oliver Stone movies. They are both going to be 78 on September 15th. Hall of Fame quarterback from Pittsburgh Central Catholic, University of Pittsburgh, and the Miami Dolphins, Dan Marino, will be 63. A fan favorite here in Northeast Ohio, Ernest Biner, will be 62. You may remember Ernest Biner for an unfortunate event in the AFC Championship game in 1987, the 1987 season, early in 1988. Ernest Biner was taking the ball in for carrying it for a tying touchdown in the last minute or so of the game, and he fumbled. Denver recovered, and the Browns eventually lost the game. Nobody here, and I think it speaks to the intelligence, I think, overall of Cleveland Browns fans, nobody here in Northeast Ohio blamed him. He was a fan favorite. When the Browns left, he was one of the players that the fans most embraced in that very emotional farewell at the old stadium. He's been welcomed. He was in the Cavaliers championship parade. We love Ernest Biner. Ernest Biner played his guts out that day in that championship game in Denver. They wouldn't have been anywhere close in that game if it weren't for his efforts. So happy birthday to Ernest Biner, really one of my favorites and one of the favorites of most Browns fans of a certain age, I would say. Finally, for birthdays on September 15th, Prince Harry of Great Britain will be 40. All right, that's it for the birthdays, anniversaries portion of the podcast. Before we get into our topics today, I'd like to give a shout out. Spent some time in the city of Chicago last week. We give a shout out to Bueno Days, the coffee shop in Little Village in Chicago. Hello, Alma, Chris, Lucy, Abby, and Jorge. Thanks for your hospitality. Spent a couple hours there and had a good time there on Cermak. We should probably talk about who Cermak was, but I'll spare you that historical footnote here. We'll talk about that some other time, maybe. Moving along, topic number one, as we record this, on September 5th, the debate between Vice President Harris and former President Trump will be coming up this coming Tuesday, the 10th of September on ABC, probably 9 o'clock. I don't know exactly. The mics will be muted during this debate while the other candidate is talking. In other words, when Vice President Harris is talking, Trump's microphone will be muted and vice versa. That was negotiated between the two campaigns. A couple of ABC News folks will be moderating. It probably will be the only time these two get together for any kind of a debate. So it might be worth paying attention to. If you don't watch it live, pay attention to the reports about it, I would say. I would certainly recommend that. Coming up on Tuesday the 10th. Okay. The second thing I want to deal with is a contract dispute here between the DirecTV company and the Disney company, who own, as you may know, ABC, all the ESPN networks, etc. It seems like we have one of these contract disputes every year at this time, and that's not by accident. I just wanted to cover that for a little bit here. There's a disruption in service, as I said, over carriage fees. How much money will Disney pay to DirecTV to have them carry their programming, for instance? Why does it happen in early September every year? Well, the answer is one word: football. And why is that? Well, you may or may not be a football fan as a listener. That's none of my business, really. But let me give you some facts here. Of the top 100 watched, in terms of ratings, television shows in the United States last year, 2023, how many do you think were football games? I'll give you a second to mull that over. Take a little sip of water here. Okay, of the top 100 watched TV shows in 2023 in the United States, 93 of them were NFL football games. 93 of 100. That leaves 7. Of the remaining 7, 3 were college football games. The game between the Wolverines and the Buckeyes was number 58. The SEC championship game between Alabama and Georgia was number 71. And the national championship game between that team up north and Washington was number 74. Okay, so that's 96, if you count those three. The State of the Union was number 21. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade was number 45. The Academy Awards was number 60. And at 92nd was the show on Fox immediately following the end of the Super Bowl, which was Next Level Chef that year. They were 92nd. That's it. Those were the top 100 rated, watched, if you will, television shows in America in 2023. 96 of them were football games. 93 of them were NFL games. So, if DirecTV wants to get their bang out of the buck with Disney, they have these disruptions. Now, these disruptions usually are solved by, as we speak today, September 5th. This happens to be the opening of the NFL season. There will be a game tonight between Kansas City and Baltimore. But they haven't solved it yet, okay? And I'll bet you there are a lot of nervous DirecTV customers all over the country wanting to sit down tonight and watch the first pro football game of the season that counts. You know, at 7:55, they might have a deal. That has happened before, but we'll see. It's really kind of frustrating and maddening that it happens every year. But I wanted to give you the reason why it happens when it happens. And it happens now because it's now the start of the football season and because football is king and then some in terms of television ratings in this country now. All right. So we've solved that. Now on to a very difficult, I think, and complicated topic. As we speak, yesterday, there was a shooting at a high school between Athens and Atlanta, Georgia, which left 2 teachers and 2 students dead. Several others were wounded. And immediately, politicians, particularly from one side, started sending their thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers don't work, folks. Every single time this happens, thoughts and prayers go out to people. Well, that's not stopping anything, okay? We have the ability to stop stuff. And I'm speaking from personal experience, not with a shooting at our school or anything like that. But everybody you know that's a teacher participates in drills. We had in-service days focused on what to do in case of a shooting. We practiced giving triage to someone who was wounded. In-service days aren't just, you know, how to teach reading better anymore. We have drills, live drills during school days where we lock down and they announce that, you know, it's not true, but that, you know, there's an intruder in the 1100 hall. What do? Do you run? Do you hide? Do you fight? You have to make snap decisions. We've been living this for years. And it's disgusting, quite honestly. And what's disgusting is we can't do anything about it to solve this problem. Well, we could. And this is my point. In Australia, and let me just paraphrase this. I don't think anybody out there thinks of Australians as wimps, do you? If you do, you're sadly mistaken. There was an awful mass shooting in 1996 in Australia. One man went on a rampage in Port Arthur, which is actually in Tasmania, the part of Australia. 35 people were killed, 23 were wounded. This man used 2 semi-automatic rifles. It went on for about 24 hours. Before they caught him, they captured him alive. He's serving 35 consecutive life without parole sentences now. I'm not going to give his name. I'm not going to magnify that. Now, what happened in Australia? Within 3 weeks, their legislature passed the National Firearms Agreement. Well, what did that do? That restricted the private ownership of fully and semi-automatic rifles, semi-automatic shotguns, and pump-action shotguns. Not taking away anybody's pistol to protect their home or hunting rifle or anything like that. It introduced uniform firearms licensing in the country of Australia. It instituted a mandatory buyback program for these restricted, now outlawed guns. The Aussie government paid a total of $350 million to buy back 643,000 firearms. They instituted a 28-day waiting period for gun sales. Not three, not five, not a week. A 28-day waiting period for gun sales, background checks, etc. So, how's that worked in the country down under? Since 1996, there have only been five incidents that qualify as a mass shooting in Australia, with a total of 58 fatalities. Now, I'll be the first to say that 58 too many, but I don't even want to look up the number in the United States. It's that big. So, you know, this is Australia, not some wimpy country someplace, okay? They responded. They acted responsibly and protected their citizens. Okay, now, what do we have here in the United States? We have, and I've seen them, members of Congress posing for Christmas card pictures with automatic weapons by the Christmas tree. We have members of Congress walking around the halls of the Capitol wearing AR-15 lapel pins. Our entertainment industry, I'm not going to let them off the hook either. They glorify violence. But here's the thing. It goes out all over the world. Our movies and television shows, etc., they're watched all over the world. And other places aren't dealing with this. So that kind of narrows it down, doesn't it? We did, in this country, have an assault weapons ban. It was passed in 1994. It was given a 10-year life with the possibility of renewal after 10 years. Well, in 1994, the Democrats had control of the Congress, and there was a Democrat, Bill Clinton, in the White House. 10 years later, when the Republicans had a majority in Congress and George W. Bush was in the White House, they let it lapse. It did reduce the number of shooting incidents that we had in the United States. There was still the awful incident at Columbine during that period. But overall, the numbers of mass shootings were significantly lower, when we had an assault weapons ban. Whether it's people are afraid to act or whether they are so bound financially and otherwise by the National Rifle Association, bought and sold by them, I don't know. I know it's some of both. But it's very frustrating to me, and I'm sure a lot of you, that we can't seem to get a hold on this, and it just keeps happening and keeps happening, and there are these lame statements from people all the time, thoughts and prayers. It's not doing it, folks. Okay. I hope I got that out of my system here. Let's move on. We will now go to the three good questions segment to finish here, and I have one actually answer to a question. If you have a good question, please send it to us by email at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three good questions, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. A couple of weeks ago, listener Harry Jordan came up with his top 10 NBA players of all time, and we threw that out there to the audience. We have a response from Jeff Cole, a loyal listener to the show. Here's Jeff's top 10, and I think this is really fascinating and pretty darn good, if you ask me. His number one is LeBron. Reasoning that he wrote is better. He's a better rebounder and passer than Jordan, had a longer career than Michael Jordan, still playing. And Jeff also thinks, and I think this is debatable, but you know, we could debate it. He thinks that being 5-4 in NBA Finals, which is LeBron's career record, is as good or better than Michael Jordan's 6-6. I'm not sure about that, but that's Jeff's opinion, and that he put LeBron at number one, and that's certainly legit. He has Michael Jordan at number two, the best scorer in his view. Number three, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the length of his career, the greatness that he exhibited. Number four, the great Bill Russell, the greatest rebounder and shot blocker in history and winner in history, 11 titles in 13 years. Then Russell's contemporary, Wilt Chamberlain, at number five. He averaged 50 points a game in 1962. 6 and 7 are Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. Remembering, Jeff notes, and this is true, when he was a rookie, Game 6 of the NBA Finals in Philadelphia, Magic Johnson started at center. He was a guard, folks. He started at center and scored 40-plus points and led the Lakers to the title that night. And Larry Bird, all-around game, One of the great passers. I'm not sure he gets enough credit for that of all time. Everybody knows he was a dead-eye shooter, but boy, could he pass the ball and hustled his rear end off. Shortened his career by hustling so much, really. Number eight, Tim Duncan. Just all-around greatness. Very humble champion. Didn't say much, just went about his business. You got to love that. Number nine, a guy that a lot of contemporary folks have forgotten, and I'm glad Jeff didn't. Oscar Robertson out of the University of Cincinnati, the Big O. He was a triple-double machine, just an unbelievable player for his era. He and Jerry Lucas had a great combination down there in Cincinnati for the Royals, which are now the Sacramento Kings. And at number 10, Jeff puts Kobe Bryant, just for his all-around play and intensity on the court. That's a really good top 10, in my opinion. Would mine be exactly the same? No, but I think I'd have at least eight or nine of those guys in my top 10. So thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Harry, for the question again. It's always fun to do those sort of things. Sports fans love that kind of stuff, right? Okay, well, that's it for this week. I think I got some stuff out of me there. Thanks for staying with me during that. We are planning a special edition, hopefully released early in the week coming up, on my remembrances and what 9/11 was like for a high school teacher in Ohio, among other things. So stay tuned for that. We'll alert you when that comes out. Thanks for being loyal listeners. Thanks for hanging in there during our Labor Day weekend break. Shout out once again to the folks in Chicago at Bueno Days. You know, I was going to mention that Cermak, the road that it's on, is named for the former mayor of Chicago, Anton Cermak. The story behind him was he was mayor during the late 1920s and early 1930s. In early 1933, January of 1933, he went down to Miami Beach with President-elect at the time, Franklin Roosevelt. That was before the 20th Amendment was passed that allowed presidents to be sworn in January instead of in early March. So Roosevelt was still president-elect. He was speaking to a crowd of people in Miami Beach, Florida, in the evening. Cermak was in the car with him, and an assassin raised up and tried to kill President-elect Roosevelt, missing President-elect Roosevelt, but hitting and fatally wounding the mayor of Chicago, Anton Cermak. So if you go down there to Little Village, there's a lot of businesses and so forth, and the street is named after Cermak. That's who he was, and I think it's important for us to know those things as we travel around and see these things. These things aren't named at random, you know, usually. So once again, shout out down there. Had a good time in Chicago over Labor Day weekend. Matt and I got to play golf at Arrowhead out in Wheaton. That was fun. So with that, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening. This is Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo. Have a good night, everybody.